I'm Derek Calito from Jemez Pueblo, and coming up shortly will be the famous Brittany Fallon, the conservation and legislative organizer for the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club. What we're going to talk about today is the New Mexico legislative session, the trials and tribulations of working on bills, lobbying for them, and ultimately getting them passed. An exhausting process that our guest today can emphasize as she lived in Santa Fe for the entire 60-day session. Brittany Fallon, hi, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Good, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So before we get into legislative talk, what made you decide to get into environmental work?
So I grew up in two states, in Rhode Island with my dad's family, who are commercial fishermen. So I spent a lot of time on the ocean. And in Florida with my mom on the Indian River estuary, which is it's a lagoon where dolphins and manatees and sea turtles all come. And so I grew up in nature and really loved it. And when I went to school, I took some environmental classes just out of interest and ended up falling in academic love with my professors, who encouraged me to pursue environmental work as a career. And that's what I did.
Was this your first session working as a lobbyist?
Yes. So I was one of the only new lobbyists this session, and I became friends with people who have been lobbying there for decades. And all of them said, oh, this is the worst session I've ever worked. And I'm actually really glad it was my first session because it set the bar pretty high. Right. For example, committees apparently don't usually meet on the weekends until later in the session. But this session, they were meeting on the weekends by the second weekend of the session. And they were meeting until late in the evenings. And the House was meeting on the floor, both in the morning and in the evening, sometimes until 3 a.m. The schedule was really grueling. And I'm just glad that I got to experience the crazy firsthand so that any future session that's easier is a pleasant surprise by comparison.
Yeah, definitely. So how many hours do you think you worked a week?
A week? Oh, around 14 hours a day.
14 hours a day? Dang.
14. Yeah.
And then maybe Sunday would be like your relaxed day.
Yeah, on Sunday I would only do 2 to 4 hours.
Just like catching up and
yeah, right. Trying to respond to emails and things like that.
So since this was your first session, what are the biggest roadblocks, or like what were your worst takeaways from this session?
So there are a lot of big egos in the building, both among the lobbyists and among the legislators. And as a younger woman, that can be a little intimidating. There's not that many women who lobby up there, and there's definitely not that many younger women who lobby. Things like trying to get your bills scheduled in a committee that has 90-something bills backed up in it is really difficult. And let's see, what else?
Yeah, just, I think, for example, some of the worst things, since it was technically my first time working up there too, like in the session, I think some of the things that were annoying or things that I constantly encountered were super strict or conservative Republicans, or maybe even Democrats. They kept bashing the bills that I went up there to watch. They kept they just wasted time, and they took up like all the time from other senators from asking questions. I was like, come on, guys. And they're asking questions that were already explained, like in the intro of the whole bill. I was like, were you not listening? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I was like annoyed, but I was like, what are you guys doing, man?
You know, the Sierra Club is actually nonpartisan, and we, in New Mexico, we more often endorse Democrats than Republicans because of the environmental stance, particularly with this being an oil and gas state. Democrats are usually more willing to regulate that. But we worked on bills that were sponsored and co-sponsored by Republicans this session. We worked on bills that were supported by the oil and gas industry and bills that were supported by the energy industry. And even so, with that context, knowing that we did work on some more moderate bills, when I would sometimes try and talk to Republican legislators, as soon as I said Sierra Club, they were done and didn't want to talk to me, despite the fact that I might have been talking to them about one of the several Republican led bills that we were working on, which was frustrating.
Okay, so let's talk about bills that failed to pass this session. First off, let's start with the solar tax credit, Senate Bill 518. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. This is a popular and common sense bill that gives a tax credit for people who want to install solar on their residences or businesses. And this bill has passed before, and it was, I believe, pocket vetoed by Governor Martinez. It was sponsored by Senator Mimi Stewart. And this bill sailed through its committees, it passed all the committees, and then in the final day of the legislature, it was not scheduled on the House floor because the Republican minority in the House was filibustering bills. So this was a really tough loss because it had passed before. It should have passed again. It was there. It was ready. We had the votes to pass it, and it just hit that roadblock. The last couple days of the legislature are really hectic, and for every bill that is going to be a problem with Republicans, like solar tax credits, for example, that is three, maybe even four other non-controversial bills that don't pass. And so leadership ends up having to make these really tough calls of, we have a good bill that we have the votes for, but if the other party is going to stall just to make it not pass, we'll lose four other bills. So pretty tough. And that was a really tough loss.
And that was a constant occurrence that these bills weren't scheduled because they...
It's not a constant occurrence, but in the last couple of days when the pressure is on and the clock is running, that's really where that tactic takes off.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, and on to the next bill, Roxy's Law, House Bill 366.
This bill would ban traps and poisons on public lands, and this year, this bill made it further than it's ever made it before. It made it through two committees, and it made it to the House floor. It wasn't scheduled there. We were struggling to gain support among moderate Democrats, which is a testament to the importance of elections. Trapping is extremely unpopular with the general public in New Mexico, according to our polls. And in 2017, there were about 2,000 fur bearer licenses sold in New Mexico, which is both hunting and trapping of fur bearer species. So that stands to reason that there are far fewer trappers in New Mexico than non-trappers. And one of the reasons why trapping should be banned on public lands, in addition to the fact that it is horrifically cruel, is that wildlife in New Mexico belongs in the public trust, and we should not have people profiting off of something that belongs to the public like that. We will be running this bill again. In fact, later today, I'm heading to a coalition meeting for Trap-Free New Mexico to talk about what we want to do with this bill in the next session. And if you want to learn more about Roxy's Law, you can go to trapfreenm.com or search for Trap Free New Mexico on Facebook, and we update it regularly.
And one bill that I thought was really pretty amazing, and it was sponsored by the Land Commissioner, correct? Stephanie Garcia Richards, Raising Oil?
It wasn't sponsored by her, but she did champion the bill.
She championed the bill. Mm-hmm. And that's Raising Oil and Gas Royalties. Senate Bill 500 and House Bill 398.
So this bill would have increased the royalty rates for oil and gas production on state lands. It would have increased the cap. Currently, royalty rates could be as high as 20%, and this bill would have increased the possibility only for new leases for the highest royalty rate to be 25%. And that would only be, for example, on the most productive wells. It wouldn't be an automatic 25% royalty rate for all new leases. And that would bring us in line with Texas, where the state land royalty rate is 25%. And one thing that I do want to note is that a royalty is not the same as a tax. A royalty is the public's cut of a resource that belongs to us. So a lot of criticisms of this bill were saying, oh, we're going to tax oil and gas out of the state, but a royalty is not the same thing. These are public lands that belong to the public. The oil and the gas in those lands belongs to us, and we deserve a cut of the profit.
Okay, and one big bill that is still being talked about, constantly being talked about, is Community Solar, House Bill 210.
Right. This was another tough loss this year. Community solar allows for the creation of community solar gardens that people can buy into, basically, and it's for people who can't install solar on their own houses or who are renters, for example. And it's important because it makes clean energy accessible and affordable to lower income New Mexicans. And this bill will 100% be run in the next session. We are already working, the coalition that ran the bill, we're already working to change it for the next year. We're going full steam ahead, and this will be one of our top priorities in 2020.
Next segment of the show is celebrations. Do you want to talk about one of the first ones that passed?
Sure. Where should I start?
Oil Conservation Division fees, Senate Bill 553. What's that one about?
This is a really common sense bill, and it, again, catches New Mexico up with other states. All it does is creates the ability for the Oil Conservation Division to have application fees, permit fees, things like that, instead of companies getting them for free. For example, in Texas, my understanding is that to get certain types of permits, the total costs can amount to up to $3,000. And all this does is it helps the Oil Conservation Division run smoothly. They need more staff in order to process permits. They need to pay for those staff. They need equipment in order to process licenses and permits. And this bill will help them fund that.
One bill, I think, was signed just this week, right? The next bill we're going to talk about was signed this week, ending coyote killing contests in New Mexico, Senate Bill 76.
Yes, this is a huge victory that has been years in the making. And what it does is it ends the slaughter for prizes of coyotes in contests. And these contests can be really gruesome. They give out prizes for things like the smallest coyote, the biggest coyote, the biggest female, the smallest female. And in at least one of the contests, the winner for the smallest coyote was literally a puppy, which is really gross.
That's horrible.
And it's cruel, and it should not be legal, and now it isn't.
That's awesome. I know I've seen like pictures of these coyote killing contests at different sports stores around the city, and like some of them, they kill like 23 coyotes, and they're like all lined up, and then the hunters are standing next to them. Mm-hmm. Like, that is just
so gruesome.
Yeah, that's absurd to have to kill that many coyotes for no reason, just because you want to.
Yeah, and there's a really common misconception, which is that coyote killing contests help maintain the population, the coyote population, like they helps reduce the population. Mm-hmm. But that is a really incorrect assumption. How coyote breeding works, and again, this is like biology PhD kicking in, is the dominance hierarchy and breeding structure of coyotes is such that the alpha female of coyotes is the female that breeds and has litters. When their dominance hierarchy starts getting messed up because different individuals are killed, mm-hmm. That means that the beta females start to breed as well. So it increases the number of females that breed when you disrupt their social structure.
And some of the prizes for winning these contests were like often a gun. I've seen like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen like one new Smith and Wesson, something crazy, like another guy. Like, geez, guys, come on. It's a little crazy. Like, let's kill like 23 coyotes so we can win another gun. I don't know. One bill that's made the most noise for New Mexico is the Energy Transition Act, Senate Bill 489. And you worked on this for like a year and a half, a year, right?
No, I didn't actually.
I mean, you're at the meetings.
Yeah.
From like almost the beginning. Halfway.
No, not even. I started working for the Sierra Club in August. So it was the majority of my time since then. But people, other environmentalists that we work with have been working on the renewable portfolio standard piece of this bill for like 3 years now.
It's a lot of work went into getting this
tons,
bill passed.
Years of work and yeah, years. Many, many, many dedicated professionals poured blood, sweat, and tears into this bill.
Do you know the history of this bill? Can you put it into context for like people that are hearing about this bill for the first time? It's kind of broken up into different sections, right?
Sure, I can. This will be a novice's perspective of the history of the bill since I wasn't there. But in the last session, there was a bill called securitization, and it was a bill that was run by PNM, and it was a really bad bill that environmentalists opposed that would shut down the San Juan Generating Station. And this year, we ran a bill, also securitization, which is a super wonky concept that I can explain in a minute. But it was an environmental-led bill, and it included a bunch of different provisions, like provisions for the labor community, severance and worker retraining for the plant and mine workers, requirements that replacement energy be located in the area, and it included a sweeping number of standards for renewable energy that makes New Mexico a leader in the clean energy movement in the U.S., and that those clean energy standards, which people have probably heard being called the renewable portfolio standard, is something that the environmental community has worked on for a really long time. And the final bill that ran this year and was passed gets New Mexico to 100% carbon-free energy by 2045.
It's like 25 years from now.
Yeah.
Which is, it's like the third most ambitious plan in America, correct?
No, actually, I think it's the most ambitious. The third state to pass a 100% carbon-free mandate. The first was Hawaii. The second was California. But for example, in California, the bill language says something like, we aspire to 100% carbon-free. And in New Mexico, it's a we shall. It's a mandate. So we also closed a lot of loopholes that existed in the previous renewable portfolio standard that New Mexico had that makes ours really strong as well.
Yeah, tightened language and like middle grounds for everyone, which is basically, do you think that's why this bill passed? Because it was like a middle ground for everyone that we could, that most folks could agree on.
Why did this bill pass? Well, I have to give a lot of credit to Governor Lujan Grisham. She campaigned on the idea of a renewable portfolio standard, and she made it clear throughout the negotiating process that she wanted her RPS, and everyone, all the opponents, were going to give it to her. And she showed really strong leadership. The bill that we started with was 50% renewable energy by 2030. And Governor Lujan Grisham and her staff are the ones who negotiated it up to the 100% carbon-free by 2045, which is an absolute dream. And in that negotiating process, I think that the governor also saw where the cards were falling on the table for the Farmington area with the coal-fired power station at the San Juan Generating Station. And coal is shutting down all over the U.S. It's not economical. It's expensive to run. And in a lot of states like New Mexico, California, Colorado, citizens do not want to be powered by coal. They want their homes to be powered by clean energy. And so with the coal mine up there, which is run by Westmoreland, having declared bankruptcy, with the San Juan Generating Station operating at half capacity already, I think she saw an opportunity to get funds and worker retraining and severance packages into that region. And that is why she negotiated the combination of securitization and the renewable portfolio standard. So what securitization does, in a very simple explanation, it's like refinancing your mortgage at a lower rate. So ratepayers for PNM are already paying for the San Juan Generating Station to operate, to the tune of $16 million a year, I believe. And when this bill is enacted, which it was already signed, the stranded costs of the San Juan Generating Station will be put into low interest rate bonds that will work out to be cheaper for the ratepayers than just paying back the cost that we owe on the plant up front.
So it's like having car payments that they have to make. They still have to make that full car payment, but now their plan is just to pay it off in a longer amount of time at a lower cost.
At a lower cost. Yeah.
So the credit doesn't go up, forcing us.
Yes, exactly. That's a good point. If PNM takes a hit, that's bad for ratepayers because they won't be able to get cheaper rates, which will make our electricity costs go up.
Can you share who all helped in getting this energy transition? Like, give some shout outs to some of the other allied organizations.
Oh my gosh, I can. I am positive I will forget some important people, though. Sanders Moore with Environment New Mexico, Ben Shelton with CVNM and his entire team, Tom Solomon and Jim McKenzie with 350.org. SOMOS, Native American Voters Alliance, Brian Condit with the Building Trades and IBEW. There are seriously like about a dozen other groups, and they are all flying out of my brain right now.
Yeah, this bill was endorsed by like so many.
It was. I mean, the fact sheet just had like a solid block of logos on it, and I was trying to picture them in my head, but I just can't.
So going forward, what does this bill mean for New Mexico?
So this, I really can't stress enough what a huge, huge, huge deal this bill is. I'm sure a lot of people have heard that we only have 12 years left to get our carbon emissions to a level that keeps our atmosphere safe. And the way to do that is to move to 100% carbon-free energy. And the fact that New Mexico will now be doing this by 2045 is a huge deal. And in reality, we will be close to reaching 100% carbon-free, more like by 2030, because once our biggest utility, PNM, hits the 50% renewable goal in 2030, they have about 30% nuclear capacity, which is a carbon-free energy source. So they'll be at, let's see, 50, 60, 80% carbon-free by 2030 in 10 years. That's amazing.
Yeah, that is. That's a huge stride.
And there are several other states considering 100% carbon-free mandates at this point, and a lot of them are looking to New Mexico now as a leader because our bill language not only is very strong when it comes to the renewable piece, but also we included things like coal shutdown. We included things like apprenticeships for labor. We included worker retraining and severance, and we included money and consultation for indigenous communities. And I think that makes our bill stand out among other states.
Yeah, New Mexico isn't last anymore. We're headed towards better. The opening song is a We Didn't Start the Fire cover by Pimp Kale. The second song is Celebration by Glitch Nemesis. And finally, the closing song is Acoustic Summer Upbeat Folk. Thanks to our guest today, Brittany Fallon of the Sierra Club. And like that, we're gone.
Thank you.
Thanks.